You're listening to Cincinnati Edition. I'm Mark Prezel. Education is the subject of constant debate. Politicians talk about it, and so do community leaders, parents, and students. Salman Khan, the founder of the Khan Academy, has some new insights into how kids can better prepare themselves for jobs of the future and have more confidence while doing it. He's on the phone with Ann Thompson.
You may have seen his hand-scribbled tutorials on YouTube. By last count, Sal Khan had more than 5 million users watching the videos on his Khan Academy website. He has a new book out called The One World Schoolhouse, Education Reimagined, and joins us in the studio to explain why the old classroom model may not fit our changing needs. Thanks for being here by phone, Sal. Just to get our listeners up to speed, briefly, what is the Khan Academy and how does it work?
Khan Academy is the not-for-profit mission of a free world-class education for anyone, anywhere. What it's most known for is a collection of videos initially made by myself, and now we have several other people making it. We've translated into the language of the world. There's an interactive platform as well. And so at minimum, you can view it as kind of a free tutor for anyone, anywhere. But then on top of that, it's starting to be used in classrooms to kind of rethink how that classroom can be structured.
All right. Now, you call the current classroom, as we've mentioned, you've written a book, The One World Schoolhouse, Education Reimagined. You call the current classroom model a passive way of learning and one that may not benefit us in the future. How so?
Yeah, you know, and this isn't 100% of classrooms, but still in most classrooms, both in K through 12 and in the college level, if you attend, you will find someone lecturing at a set pace to everyone in the room, and the students will be passively quiet, and maybe they might be taking some notes or something like that. And everything that we know about how humans learn say that is not how they learn, and that's probably why at the college level you have so many students cramming the night before the exam. They weren't able to actually get a lot of the lecture. And so what we're saying is let's remove that lecture from class time, especially now that there's other ways to deliver the lecture part of the information. On-demand video is actually better. You can get it at your own time and pace. You can, if you're confused by something, you can pause it. You can find other resources. You can get help from someone. And leverage that really valuable time that humans have together in a room to be interactive so that students can tutor each other, so that they can interact more with the teachers. The irony here is the main effect of the tool that's allowing you to do that might not even be visible. It's because the students are able to get the lecture at their own time and pace. They're able to do problem solving. Teachers are able to get data. The classroom itself will just be much, much more human.
So you stress that it's more beneficial for students to explore concepts on their own. You gave math as an example in your book. Tell me why that's helpful, and also do you think students outside of the classroom would actually be motivated to do this?
Yeah, all of the cognitive research, and I think all of just personal experience speaks to the fact that you learn by doing, you learn by engaging it with problems. And what's happening in a traditional model is, everyone has to learn at the same pace, but even more, you sit passively in a classroom and then you attempt to do the problem-solving part, which is traditionally called homework. You attempt to do that on your own, and that's the more important part. But unless you have you're lucky to have a tutor or you have family members who can help you out, many students are just not able to engage, and they get frustrated, and then that cycle just keeps going. In this reality, at minimum, the problem solving is occurring around other human beings. It's occurring around their teachers. They can get help. And what I say is, even if there is, ideally, if a student feels that they need a lecture or they need an explanation, it's there for them. It's on demand. But if they are going to skip out on whatever they were going to do at home, it's better that they at least get the problem solving in classrooms, because that's where the real learning is going to happen, versus just getting the lecture in classroom.
And you mentioned in your book what you call Swiss cheese learning, where kids maybe don't grasp the entire concepts and everything builds upon one another, and that could hurt them down the road.
Yeah, in our current model, it's everyone moves together at the set pace. Even if you get a C or a D on an exam, even if you fail actually like a unit exam, you will be promoted into the next subject. The whole classroom moves together. And that pretty much guarantees that you will have huge, huge gaps in your knowledge. And that's why when students get to algebra or calculus, those subjects aren't innate, they're not inherently difficult, but these students show up to algebra, and we've seen it in the data, students who show up to algebra not even knowing their multiplication tables, not knowing how to add fractions, not knowing how to manipulate exponents. And so they could be innately smart, they might have a great teacher, but it's very hard to interface with algebra if you don't know a lot of your pre-algebra. And that's why at the college level you have 20-30% of students having to take remedial math, which is essentially sixth grade math. Our current system is essentially just pushing them forward. They have more and more gaps as they advance. And to kind of get around the gaps, sometimes the curriculum gets watered down. The students start to become more pattern matching, and they're really not getting anything. They're getting very superficial understandings of these subjects. I can't tell you how many people I know who've taken calculus, and some of them did okay in calculus, and say, well, what is calculus, or what is it for? And they're at a bit of a loss. And that's because they didn't have the foundation. If you have strong foundations, and I'm not talking about this is just for quote-unquote math people. This is for anyone. If you have strong basic foundations, the algebra and the calculus will start to seem intuitive. And we've all experienced this in one subject or another. So what we're saying is, and we're seeing this in classrooms, and we're using tools like Khan Academy to do it, instead of what's variable being your grade and what's fixed is when and how you learn it, what's fixed should be that you have a solid foundation, solid proficiency, and the variable is the pacing and when you learn something.
We've been talking a lot about the problems of passive learning. Why does the world, as you say, require active learning?
Well, that's what we as human beings do. We are active animals. If you see how I have a 3-year-old at home, a 1-year-old at home, and if you see how they learn, they go and investigate things. They explore those things. I don't know a 4 or 5-year-old in the world, or 1 or 2-year-old in the world, who if they see a new object or a new thing that they won't immediately go explore. That's what play is. And then we bring them into the system, and we start to suppress that. We teach them to be passive. We teach them to be, you must be quiet. You must sit in that chair for the next 5, 6, 7 hours. And then at the end of it, when they're 22 or 23, we tell them, look, in the workforce, we need you to be creative. We need you to be an active problem solver, even though for the last 16 years, we told you to be passive.
Under your model, what would the college experience of the future look like?
I go into a lot of depth of that in the book, but the basic idea, the classroom won't be a lecture-based anymore. You would have people learning at their own pace. It won't be seat time-based. In colleges right now, you literally get credit hours that measure how much time you spend in a seat. It would be based on competency. And so you would go, you would learn how you see fit, and actually you might not even, you could learn by going to a traditional college, community college. You could learn through an apprenticeship, and you would show to the world that you knew it instead of having a Bachelor of Science or Bachelor of Arts that actually does not carry a lot of information with it anymore for an employer. You would show competencies in a bunch of skills. Some of them could be more traditional kind of job-focused skills, like, hey, I'm a software engineer, or I have good writing skills, while some of them could be more intellectual, my creative thinking skills, my logical skills. And you would also have a kind of a portfolio of creative works. And I go into a lot more depth in the book, but I think that all of these things, not only make sense, but we're already starting to see them happen.
So how do we change, and how do you gain momentum for your ideas here?
Well, you know, the one surprisingly good thing that's happened in the last 2 years is I assumed Khan Academy was just going to be the supplemental thing that would help students independent of a formal school. But we've been adopted fairly quickly in actual physical schools. 20,000 schools are using us in some way, shape, or form. There's a district out here in Northern California, every 5th through 8th grade, and this is one of the best school districts in the country, Los Altos, is using Khan Academy to kind of move to this more self-paced world. So in our point of view, it's kind of happening already, and it's a grassroots thing. It's grounds up. No one's telling the teachers to do it. No one's telling the parents or the students to do it, but it's happening through word of mouth.
Besides using Khan Academy in the classroom, what other things do you recommend to get schools on the path under your model?
Well, you know, I met a head of school locally at an independent school who said, you know, what I'm telling my teachers is, what do you do that Khan Academy doesn't do? And that's not some type of, you know, strange threat. It's more of saying, look, now there's an opportunity for you as a human being to move up the value chain. A computer will never be able to do everything that a human being can do. And so now that we're not basing our classrooms on lecture, how can you use that class time to be more interactive, to be more valuable? You know, one thing I point out, and this is the real crux of the book, this is not a virtual tool that's somehow going to replace physical classrooms. That will never be done. I have a 3-year and 1-year-old. I want them to go to a physical classroom. What it does is it allows that physical classroom to be more human and more interactive.
All right. Well, thanks for your time, Sal. I know you're a busy person. Sal Khan of the Khan Academy and the author of The One World Schoolhouse. For Cincinnati Edition, I'm Ann Thompson.